The Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129 presents Just Love, a conversation on the Church's social mission with Monsignor Kevin Sullivan.
Welcome to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is our weekly conversation about what's going on in the world, and we view it from the perspective of our kind of Catholic social values. And one of the reasons we call it Just Love is because we're in the business of trying to make our world more just and more compassionate. And we say just love. So if you just love God, your neighbor, yourself, and if each of us do that, then our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. So this month is the month in which we try to raise awareness about some of those who are challenged. And so it's called Developmental Disabilities Awareness Month. And today on our show, we're going to kind of be speaking with people who are in the area of trying to work with people with developmental disabilities and trying to figure out how they can live their lives better and what, as a society, we should be doing to kind of make sure that we're aware of those disabilities and what we need to do in order to kind of make those with developmental disabilities especially welcome in our world, and also what we do to try to make sure that those individuals might live to their fullest possible potential. So we're going to be speaking first in a few minutes with Katie Driscoll, who is the founder of Changing the Face of Beauty, which is trying to promote imagery in advertising and other places with a vision of equal representation of people suffering different disabilities and different abilities throughout the media. And then a little bit later on in the show, we're going to be speaking with Christy Chow, who is the education director for Kennedy Child Study Center, which is one of our Catholic Charities affiliates. And that is a program that begins education very, very young, when kids are 2 years old. And they do it because those who have certain disabilities, if you begin to intervene in their lives early, you have a much better chance of helping them to grow and to fulfill more of their potential. So we're in Developmental Disabilities Awareness Month. We're going to be speaking with two people who can kind of speak to us about disabilities and what's going on. Tom, what's in the news?
Monsignor, there's a couple of things. You know, I know you had mentioned, obviously, Just Love's show purpose is to talk about the dignity of the human person. Interestingly, out in Berkeley, California last week, there was a vote by the Berkeley City Council to divest companies working on the U.S.-Mexico border wall. It happened back on March 17th, and the city of Berkeley, and it was unanimously passed a resolution divesting Bay Area City from any companies that build, design, help, finance, or do any construction to maintain the estimated $4.1 billion border wall that's planned by President Trump between the border of the United States and Mexico. Berkeley is also going to cease doing business with any of these companies. Some other California cities, Oakland and San Francisco, are considering similar legislation, as are some cities in Illinois and in New York. And interestingly enough, some two dozen Bay Area businesses prior to this, including construction companies and some high-tech surveillance companies, had responded to a pre-solicitation notice last month by the Department of Homeland Security that they were interested in working and work related to the wall. So it's going to have some blowback in the area, but I think the city of Berkeley has decided that they don't want their funds invested in that kind of a venture.
You know, it's interesting. The notion of economic boycotts are things that have been a part of American history for quite a while. And in fact, probably the biggest boycott is when labor decides it's going to boycott working and it's going to withhold its own labor because they don't think they're being treated fairly and they want a better break from the businesses that they work at. And, you know, in probably one of the more famous boycotts going back decades now was the boycott organized by Cesar Chavez of lettuce. Tom, was it lettuce or grapes or both?
I think it was both. I think it was grapes and lettuce, Monsignor.
Right. So, and to get better wages for farm workers. And so, you know, what Berkeley, California is doing is just in that tradition of an entity, an organization using its economic power to kind of move the compass a little bit in a direction of the way they think it should be moved and trying to make the world a better place. So I think that's interesting. I think, Tom, are they the first place that we've heard of doing something like that?
Yeah, Berkeley was the very first. But as I said, Monsignor, there are some other cities. San Francisco is thinking of doing it, Oakland. And I know there were some rumblings here in New York City as well as in Chicago. So other cities are thinking of it.
So good, Tom. Thank you for mentioning that. You got anything else in the news?
Yeah, I would say we do. I would say actually today is, or this week, I should say, is actually was a World Water Day. And I think it's kind of interesting at his annual audience or his weekly audience, Pope Francis marked the day, which 25 years ago was instituted by the United Nations. Basically saying he greeted people who had come to Rome for a conference on watersheds that was co-sponsored by the Pontifical Council of Agriculture and of Culture. Interesting on World Water Day, just a couple of statistics for people, Monsignor. According to the World Water Council out of the United Nations, currently there's about 1 billion people who are without safe drinking water in the world today. And then that breaks down to roughly 932 million people lack safe drinking water. 319 million are inhabitants of sub-Saharan Africa, which is about 32% of the population. There, 554 million are in Asia, which is about 12.5% of the population, and 50 million South Americans, which is about 8% of the population of South America. So, you know, drinking water obviously is such an important component of daily life. And when you think about the number of people who wind up lacking access to it, I think it's something that we have to be mindful of. And I think it's something we have to wind up paying attention to.
You know, in the news this week, I heard an interview with somebody who is claiming that there's a tremendous underinvestment in the infrastructure of water in the United States. And her argument was that, you know, pipes are leaking, we're wasting water, and that I didn't understand the argument completely, but the point she made, if we invested hundreds of millions of dollars in fixing up the water infrastructure, it would really multiply in the way that it would positively impact the economy. I didn't quite get that, but it certainly does seem to me from my own experience that, you know, in certain parts of the country where the infrastructure was put in place a while ago with water pipes, you know, you probably do get a lot of leaking. You probably do get things that aren't as effective as they should be. And so I think it is a very kind of interesting thing. Most of the world takes the presence of clean water, the ability to have good drinking water, for granted. But yet there are huge parts of the world in which, for millions of people, that is not the reality. So I'm glad that you know, we're kind of raising that up as an important issue. So let's now go to our first guest. Our first guest is Katie Driscoll, who is the founder of Changing the Face of Beauty. Katie Driscoll, thank you so much for being with us on Just Love.
Thank you so much for having me.
Great. So give our listeners just a little bit of the background of Changing the Face of Beauty. How did the organization come to be founded and what's it about?
Well, let me think. 5 years ago, we decided to kind of start a conversation. I have a daughter who is now 7 with Down syndrome, and she's definitely the silent motivator. But anyway, we decided to have a conversation because I had realized that, you know, my family, my daughter, isn't represented in the largest, most influential voice in the world, that advertising voice. And so we essentially, you know, started reaching out to the community and asking to capture individuals with disabilities wearing small Etsy vendor products and asking these vendors to, you know, use these individuals in their marketing messages. And we essentially, you know, grew from there. And because we've had such wonderful press coverage over the years and helping us you know, elevate this conversation, I would have a lot of questions like, who have you influenced, Katie? And unfortunately, at that time, I couldn't really say there was any major brands that I had influenced. And so we had to reach out and influence those brands. So we launched a social media campaign at the end of 2014, asking for 15 companies to raise their hand and say they would include at least one model with a disability in their advertising. And it started off slow, honestly. I wasn't quite sure that I'd have even five. So we used the hashtag 15 in 2015, and we pushed it. A lot of organizations got behind us, and we were asking the question of, you know, most major retailers, hey, you know, will you be the one to raise your hand and say, I will include a model with a disability in 2015? And like I said, we started off slow. Probably 4 or 5 months into it, we had about 30. And about 6 months into it, we shut it off at about 100. So that's kind of when we realized that this was a good conversation to have, and we were influencing change. And at that point, we became a nonprofit that we are today, with partners now that are financially committed to helping us change the advertising industry.
So, Katie, you now have, what'd you say, hundreds of companies that have agreed to kind of feature in their advertising certain models who have disabilities?
Yes. You know, after that specific social media campaign, we were able to commit a little over 100 companies that said in 2015 they would absolutely include a model with a disability in their marketing message. And I am proud to say 100% of them did that. A lot of those companies learned a valid lesson that, you know, this really isn't a big deal, and it really is a good business decision. I tell them all the time, you know, they absolutely can change the future of people living with a disability by valuing them as consumers in their advertising. It's that simple. This world, you know, is you have to be a consumer to be invaluable, unfortunately, and that is why advertising is so powerful and so important to this change.
So which would our listeners recognize the names of some of the companies that have agreed to do it?
Right, absolutely. You know, first and foremost, Nordstrom is actually a partner of ours, and I have to give them kind of a shout out. They've been including models with disabilities since the 80s. It's always been a part of their brand. But some of the other companies that we work with, Matilda Jane, you know, they're a newly inclusive brand, and they speak out all the time about what a wonderful, you know, business decision it's been, as well as, you know, all the positive feedback they receive from their consumers. And then you could go to Land of Nod, which is a very popular children's furniture brand, AC Moore, which is a national craft store brand. You know, it's amazing to hear the response, and you know, it's really simple, and they realize that after they have their first shoot that there's nothing special to be done. It's absolutely about communicating to all their consumers.
We're speaking with Katie Driscoll, who is the founder of Changing the Face of Beauty. And we're talking with her about some of the success that her organization and she has had in kind of introducing models who have disabilities to be part of the marketing campaigns of now over 100 of brands that are using that. Katie, you kind of began to go into it a little bit, but are there any challenges that a company would face in trying to include models or model with disabilities?
Yeah, unfortunately, you know, this is a new concept. There hasn't been an organization that's pushed for this change. And so obviously we've seen over the last 10 years even, a shift in advertising messages and diversity and in all different types of ways, you know, size, look, skin color, all of those things are important. And unfortunately, the largest minority, which is the disability community, remains out of that conversation. So on the front end, most brands aren't even thinking about it. And if they do, then we have a lot of inspiration and pity that seem to follow the disability community around. And it really limits the community in the ability to, you know, succeed. If someone is pitying someone, they don't, you know, you don't see the value that, that the community offers. And so part of that is the education that we have with these brands. You know, we're asking for you to represent humanity because this is what we look like and this is who we are. And, you know, I really push the fact that, you know, the empowerment piece of you can change the future of this enormous population of people. And it really is pretty amazing to see that fear and pity kind of melt away. And then the realization of, hey, this is a good business decision. We want this enormous minority as a consumer. And so we're going to change our message. But unfortunately, on the front end, if I can't have that conversation, a lot of that follows this change around. And hopefully with conversations like this, the right people hear it and understand that we're asking for, you know, the same thing that anyone else would ask for.
You know, so why would you think that, you know, when we think about people with disabilities, some needs that they can live their lives with dignity and fulfilled, probably I would say many of our listeners might not think that modeling was a way that you would do. They would think about, are there educational opportunities? Is there access? If there's a physical disability, is there access to transportation? This is a little bit of a different approach to helping them. How'd you come up with this idea?
Right. I know. It is a different approach. And, you know, when I was, when I found out my child would be born with Down syndrome, I go back to that moment where the first image that came to my mind was Lauren Potter from Glee and Chris Burke from Life Goes On, who are both adults that are successful, living semi-independent lives. And, you know, they represented Down syndrome to me. And I didn't know it at that moment, but later I realized how profound that media image is to all of us. You know, parents that are raising children with disabilities, we need to be able to see what is possible. And media tends to communicate that to us. So as time went on, I realized, okay, I never want to ask somebody to value my daughter. I just want them to value my daughter. And then through conversations with my husband and that, you know, we came to the conclusion that, you know, the only voice that can truly communicate value in this world is the advertising voice. And we just decided to go after it.
Well, I think that's a pretty creative way. I mean, one might suggest there are other places you can show value other than advertising.
Right.
But I do think that you're right. I mean, we do live in a society which we brand everything, we market everything. And so that in that, which is so much part of our daily living, to include models with disability kind of almost communicates without saying a whole word, saying many words, that this is valuable and this is part of the world that we live in. You know, but interesting, by the way, you mentioned Chris Burke. My next guest up is going to be from Kennedy Childs Study Center in New York. And Chris Burke is a graduate of Kennedy Childs Study Center, 30, 40 years ago.
Awesome.
Chris is just a wonderful, wonderful guy and an example of, and actually in a little video we did at one point, Chris says, you know, it's not about our disabilities, it's about our abilities. He said, you know what? I don't really have Down syndromes. I have up syndrome. And it, right. And it was just a wonderful little kind of vignette that we've used a few times. So you know, you've been working, you've knocked on a lot of doors. Sometimes you didn't get as open a door as you could. When you got a closed door and there was not an openness to it, what were the reasons, the rationales the companies gave you saying, we don't think we can do that? What'd they tell you?
You know, generally they don't tell you anything because they are fearful of that difference and that, you know, this concept. But I have to say that I believe that when a mission is right, God kind of steps in and takes care of it. And I've been so blessed over the last 5 years that he has truly, helped me decipher what the next, you know, what the next turn or the next door will be. And he places people in my path that make things happen. And I think that's why, I know that's why Changing the Face of Beauty has succeeded over the years. It's because it's right. And it needs to happen.
Well, Katie Driscoll, thank you for taking the time to be with us on Just Love today. And thank you for the work you're doing. And thank you for changing the face of beauty by including people with disabilities in models as in catalogs. So thank you so much for taking the time to be with us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Great. Katie Driscoll, the founder of Changing the Face of Beauty. And what Changing the Face of Beauty tries to do very simply is to make sure that in all the marketing, branding campaigns that companies do, that they make sure that among their models are individuals with disabilities, because what it communicates is that they're part of our world, and marketing, communication, buying stuff is so much part of our world that you really need to have all types of people represented there. So, thank you for being with us on Just Love. Just do it. Just love God. Just love yourself. Our world will be more just and will be more compassionate. We're going to take a break now, and we'll be back just in 2 minutes on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. Welcome back to Just Love. Just do it. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. And our world will be more just. It will be more compassionate. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. We look at the world through the vision of Catholic social teaching and our Catholic social values, which give us a perspective. And one of the values that is at the core of that is the dignity of the human person. We believe that every person is made in the image and likeness of God. And even if that person is challenged, has disabilities, we still believe that person is made in the image and likeness of God and is worthy of being treated with dignity and respect. So as we are celebrating or marking Developmental Disabilities Awareness Month, we're kind of talking about what people are doing to try to make sure that those with disabilities are able to live to their full potential, that they're not stigmatized, but that they're treated as a human beings. Tom, what other news item we have?
Monsignor, one thing I think that's an interesting story, and I think bringing up again, we're talking about people being treated with dignity, was that at the Wednesday General Audience, Pope Francis also addressed a situation in Italy where the Italian media called Sky Media is in the process of trying to lay off and move some employees from their Rome office and move their headquarters to Milan. The Pope actually addressed this during his talk, and he said that some business decisions such as this, that deals with workers being laid off, can be a grave sin. In short, what he basically said was that employers who make shady business deals that threaten people's livelihoods commit sins that rob men, women, and families of their dignity. And to quote him, whoever, because of economic maneuvering and business dealings that are not clear, closes factories and businesses that takes away work from men and women commit a grave sin. And as I had mentioned, the Pope was speaking to a group of employees from Sky Television. Several hundred employees risk losing their jobs after the company announced plans to move from Rome to Milan. Sky Media claims the move was basically because of rising costs and outdated digital infrastructure in Rome. But the local union has criticized the company's decision, which they said will force 300 workers to transfer from the capital and 200 workers to be laid off. And Pope Francis finished by urging a rapid solution to the impasse that takes into account the rights of all, especially the families.
You know, that's a very interesting point. And from the perspective of our Catholic values, we oftentimes talk about the governmental budgets as being moral documents. We talk about them because they decide how much we're going to tax people. They decide how much we're going to spend in this area, how much we're going to spend on schools, how much on snow removal, how much on military stuff. So the choices that are made in a budget really do reflect values, and they reflect things that we place importance on. And so therefore, there is a strong moral element to budgeting and making of budgets. Now, what Tom, you pointed out is there is also an incredibly important ethical dimension to how businesses run their companies. One of the groups that has been very supportive of Catholic charities recently is a group called Catholic Renewal. And I'm going to take a moment to tell our listeners about it. Catholic Renewal is a group of people in the restructuring business, mostly lawyers and finance people. And restructuring has become the new word for when a company is not doing too well and sometimes it has to go into bankruptcy. And you know, they talk about, I think, Chapter 7, sometimes Chapter 11. And part of coming out of bankruptcy is how do you restructure the company so that it can get back in business? And just a little bit, I know most of our listeners know it, but just a reminder is that oftentimes when a company goes into bankruptcy, it's because they can't pay their bills. So for whatever reason, they're not only not making a profit, they just don't have any money to pay all their bills. And so what winds up in a bankruptcy is that some of the people who earned, you know, spent time and they earned money based upon their business with the company, they're not going to get paid. They may get paid nothing, or they may get paid, you know, a few cents on a dollar, 50 cents on a dollar. That's what part of the bankruptcy kind of proceedings are all about, figuring out which creditors get how much and which order they need to be paid. Now, why do I mention all this? I mention all this is because the people who are making these decisions have a responsibility to act ethically. And while when we talk about fiduciary responsibility, we talk about the responsibility that a director or somebody has to the company and to protect the assets of the company, there is another element to it where the workers in a company and everything else in the company also need to be treated in an ethical way. So when the Pope speaks about what a company does when they kind of move from one place to another is right in line with what we're trying to do in Catholic Charities in providing a place where those who are involved and through Catholic Renewal can show their responsibility, show their generosity, their philanthropic generosity. And it's interesting because when I listen to them talk and you're at meetings or you're at events and they're talking informally, I'm just surprised how many of them will articulate the fact that, you know, they do worry about jobs when they restructure a company. You know, you oftentimes hear, well, the personnel costs are going through the roof. We can't sustain it this way. And so what people talk about is job cutting and how can you cut back there. And so all those decisions have ethical components. Now, you don't get oftentimes to a very clear, concrete answer. You sometimes get an answer which says, gee, maybe this way is better, maybe that way is better. But it always should be looked through the prism of what's the ethical thing to do, the value of work, the dignity of the human person. So let's take a break. And when we come back, we will speak with one of the teachers at Kennedy Child Study Center. We're going to speak with Christy Chow, and she's the educational director there. We're going to speak about the great work that Kennedy Child Study Center does. So let's take a break. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is Just Love, the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. Welcome back to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is our weekly conversation about what's going on in the world and how we view it through the lens of Catholic social teaching. Well, this week, because we are in Developmental Disabilities Awareness Month, we've been focusing on those with disabilities and how do we make sure that they are allowed to achieve their full potential? How are they viewed with dignity and treated with respect? And in the early part of the show, we spoke with somebody who is trying to make the world recognize that in marketing that they can use models with disabilities to actually as part of their brand. So Katie Driscoll was the founder of Changing the Face of Beauty, kind of spoke with us a little bit about that. And now we're going to go to Christy Chow, who is the education director for Manhattan for Kennedy Child Study Center, which is one of the Catholic Charities affiliated agencies that works with children who are very, very young and have certain disabilities. Christy, thank you so much for being with us on Just Love.
Hi, how are you?
I am fine, and thanks for taking the time.
Of course.
Give our listeners just a little bit of a sense of your background and how you became involved in doing this type of work.
So I am the education director for the Manhattan site of Kennedy Child Study Center. However, I have always been an educator since I was born into this role as my older sister has Down syndrome. So all through my life, I have been working on teaching and modifying things for her, which has helped me teach and modify the kids that we have at our center.
So very early, you were kind of came in contact with because of your sister, and that got you very interested in doing something in this area.
Yes, even as I know not everyone can remember like first memories and when certain things happen, but I do remember writing like an essay in second or third grade where I said I wanted to be a special ed teacher so that people wouldn't, so I could protect people from bullying them just like my sister. And this is what I wanted to do. So I was very lucky to know exactly what path I wanted to take. And no matter how long it took me, I got there.
And what was the path you took to get to where you are now? Was it a long path?
It was a long path. So I worked with a lot of volunteers when I was younger, and in my teenage years, I worked at a camp called Ansiawa, and it was a camp in upstate New York where children with disabilities from four different counties could go to this camp for 2 weeks, and it was kind of like a respite program for the parents. And when I was younger, and I couldn't officially work there, I volunteered, and I helped out in the units of the camp, and then even when I was able to work there, I continued to work. And even now, I still have a lot of contacts from there. And they were all teachers and OTs and siblings of children with different disabilities that just wanted to make their summer, like those 2 weeks for the summer for those kids, they felt normal. And we would take them to places and take them on, like boats in the middle of Seneca Lake in upstate New York, and kids that would never have experienced it, we made it happen for them.
We're speaking with Christy Chow, who's the education director at Kennedy Child Study Center. We're speaking about some of the things she did on her way to becoming the educational director at Kennedy Child Study Center. So, Christy, tell our listeners a little bit. So how is it different teaching a young person, a child, with a developmental disability than from kind of teaching a child that doesn't have a disability?
For me, it's the same. You just have to have more patience and you have to try things more. Like when we're working with our children and we're working on, let's say we want them to complete a puzzle, they may need more assistance with it, but you go in it with the same mentality and the same goal that they're gonna finish this, and this is what we want them to do. All through my life with my sister, I tried to make her as independent as possible, and that's what I tell our parents here, that my job is to help your children become as independent as they can, so that way they can move on to the next step, to the next level of their career.
So, Christy, tell our listeners who, you know, may have come across somebody who was disabled, but they don't maybe know a whole lot about development disabilities. Tell our listeners a little bit about what is a developmental disability?
So developmental disability is a disability where they're not developed as they should be typical for their age. So let's say I come in contact with a five-year-old, and actually I have a five-year-old, my daughter's turning five tomorrow, and her development is not the same as the five-year-old that we have here. So the five-year-old that we have here, they may be doing things that you would expect a 2 or 3 year old to do. So, and when we work with them, we have to keep that in mind so we can just modify what we're doing, and they're attainable for the 2 or 3 year old level.
So when I would assume that there probably are different degrees of disability in how one can function?
Absolutely. And everyone is different, and everyone ranges, and one child might be able to do everything gross motor-wise, so they'll be able to run and play and do everything on the playground, but when it comes to being in the classroom, like maybe they have some issues with fine motor, and they can't hold the pencil right or cut with scissors. And another child sitting right next to them, maybe the complete opposite. And it's just finding out what their strengths are and working with them on their strengths and then working with on those weaknesses through their strengths.
Well, that must be hard for a teacher, because how do you prepare a lesson plan if people have such different kind of needs?
That's what the world of special ed is. Everyone differentiates for all their children, and you're constantly thinking of your children and grouping them so they can work. You're working with 2 or 3 kids on the same goal. And every week, it's a lot of work. Being a teacher is a tremendous amount of work, and you have to constantly plan, and you over-plan. So you have your day, but you know this could be right and this could go wrong. And let me see, I have something planned for when I need to just throw everything out the window.
So, Christy, you're now the director of education. I assume you were a teacher at some time before you became director.
I started with Kennedy and back in 2002, so I've been here for a very long time. I started as a teacher in the Bronx, and I was a teacher for about 6 years, and then I became the senior teacher, which I just had some administrative duties outside of the classroom, and I still had some inside the classroom. And then I became the assistant director, and then probably about 3 or 4 years ago, it all muddles together, I became the education director in Manhattan.
So, Chris, you mentioned before that that it's a hard job teaching, and it's a particularly hard job teaching kids with disabilities. What are the biggest challenges you find in trying to help a teacher to be a good teacher?
The thing, they have to have an open mind, and they have to know going into it, every day is going to be different, every day is going to be hard, and we just have to keep pushing through. Because that is, like, it is a hard job, and you have to plan, and you have to be ready for it, and you're going to have those days where everything is perfect, and then you're going to have days when it's not, and you have to have that type of personality to kind of go with the ebb and flow of the week.
And how do you find, do teachers tend to last for a long time, or do they short time, and then they maybe burn out, get tired? What's your experience been with that?
We have both. We have teachers that you know are just natural teachers, with people that have known that they wanted to teach forever. They just have the natural ability to, this is how we work with kids, and kids gravitate to them. And then we have teachers that think this is what they want to do. So they go into teaching, and then they realize the amount of work that they have to put into it. And they're like, no, this isn't for us. So we have a variety of different teachers here at Kennedy. We have teachers that normally, if they are with us for about 2.5 years, then we know they're going to stick out and they're going to continue with us.
That's like the break-off time before.
Right.
If they get over the initial period, then they're probably going to be there for a while.
Right. And normally, once teachers are with us, because they're so supported, they don't want to go anywhere else. And they'll tell us that, too.
Do you have a hard time recruiting teachers, or a lot of people want to do it?
We have a hard time now because there's a teaching shortage in New York State. And the way people view teachers and how it's not a very honorable profession, and you don't get paid as much, and society's views on what teachers should be responsible for, it does make it harder. And there's a lot of accountability on teachers, and we don't get the recognition sometimes, and sometimes the pay isn't what we would want it to be.
So,
a lot of things that we do.
So you just mentioned about teachers. If there were one thing, like, in society that you think we need to work on better as a society with people with developmental disabilities, what would the thing we should work on as a society?
I think as a society, for people with disabilities, we just have to look at them as the same as you and I, and that they just have something that they do differently, and they have some things that they need extra help with. I know that my sister now lives in a group home in Las Vegas, and she had this one job that she loved, and it was at Banana Republic, and she would fold clothes and do all these different things, but the customers didn't really like them being there. And they made a big deal about it. So now she's back and she's working in a sheltered workshop. And she tells me she's just as happy because she's with her friends and she does what she wants to do every day. And when I walk into a store and I see other people with disabilities that are working there, it makes me happy. It makes me, they're doing what they need to do.
So let me tell you a story about that. Okay, I'll tell you a story about that because I drive up to Albany fairly frequently and periodically, and I'll stop in one of the stops there, and I went into the rest area and the restaurant and all the stores that were there one day, and I go into this Cinnabon place, and in the Cinnabon place is a woman working there with Down syndromes, and she was waiting on me, and I ordered a cup of coffee. And then I pointed to all the cinnamon buns that were there, and I said, "So what do you recommend? What do you think?" And she said, "Nothing. There's not a single healthy thing here. Too much sugar. They're no good for you." I just thought it was the most honest thing that I've ever gotten from somebody who was in retail trying to sell you something. I just thought it was a great, honest interaction. I thought it was great.
Absolutely. And I bet you bought six of them.
No, she wouldn't let me. She told me, "They're not healthy." I said, "Okay, I won't buy anything. Just give me the coffee." So I probably would have, though, but I didn't. So it's, I always like when you see a store that, you know, cashiers, wherever, that you do have people with disabilities working there. And I will tell you, and my experience is that they are among the better workers in a place.
Absolutely. They greet you. They say hello. They're very polite. They want to help you. They want to do their job, and they take their job very seriously. And that's one thing. I'm the same with you. If I'm in an organization or I'm in a store and I see somebody with a developmental disability and they're given the same opportunities, I will go back time and time again.
And I will tell you one of the reasons why, and if you just, I'll use some stereotypes, okay? But if you go up to a cashier sometimes who is somebody who is a late teenager or something like that, so many times you find them talking to other cashiers. They're much more interested in what they're doing after work that day. And sometimes you have to, you know, get their attention to wait on you. You never have to worry about that when you walk up to a cashier with somebody with a disability. Boy, they're doing their job. They want to wait on you. They want to help you. And so I think, you know, just from a effectiveness point of view, oftentimes people with disabilities do a better job than people who may not have them.
Yeah, absolutely.
So if there were, what happens? Let's just talk about Kennedy for a moment and the children who were there. And I just know what great work is being done there. But what happens when they quote unquote graduated, what, around age 4 or 5?
Yeah, everyone, once they turn 5, then they are evaluated again by the Board of Ed, and they're placed in community schools or our District 75 schools. And a lot of our parents, when they leave us, they still come back to us for advice and, "I need this," and, "Can you help me with this?" Or they even bring their children back to visit us, which is great. And they all have that connection to us. So I feel like they're always part of our family even after they graduate. But they do go to other schools in the New York City area, and some go to District 75, which have very self-contained classrooms, and some go to community schools. A lot of our kids that are in our 12s, they go to a community school. So they're in their school with children from their neighborhood, and I think that's fantastic for them because then they get to integrate with them and play with them on the playground. And the kids that don't have disabilities are exposed to all these different types of people.
Now, would they be in the school with everybody else? Would they also be in a classroom with all the others who do not have learning disabilities?
There is a handful of our kids that go to what they call an ICT class. So the ICT class is half special ed kids and half kids that have no issues at all. And I know that with my girls, if I wanted them, I would ask for them to be in that classroom because you learn a sense of compassion if you're on the non-disability side of the classroom. Like, and you learn to help your fellow peers, and I just feel like you grow up with a different mindset.
And I would imagine that as with many things in life, there's a spectrum of abilities, disabilities, functioning, non-functioning, and I guess depending on some of that, there is maybe a little bit greater potential among some to move forward educationally?
Yeah, it just depends on all where their functioning ability is when they leave us and what they can do. As we work to get them as independent as possible, there are some kids that when we are working with them, that they have to go to a self-contained classroom to continue to work on their skills.
Christy, the one final thing you'd like our listeners to kind of remember or keep in mind, what would that be?
What I said before, that everyone with a disability or not a disability, we're all the same, and everyone needs to play in the playground together.
Thank you so much. Christy Chow is the Director of Education for the Manhattan campus of Kennedy Child Study Center. She's been doing this for a while. And thank you for being with us, Christy. Thanks for taking the time to be with us on Just Love today.
Thank you for having me.
Great. So I'm delighted that this week, when it is a week, the month for Developmental Disabilities Awareness, that we kind of have raised up that topic by models who are in the business of kind of marketing brands for people. And now hundreds of companies have said, okay, we're going to include a model with a disability, and whether it's furniture that we're selling or whether it's clothes, we're going to include them. And I'm so glad we got to speak with Christy Chow, because Kennedy Child Study Center is one of Catholic Charity's most effective programs to deal with those with developmental disabilities from a very, very early age. So I'm delighted that we were able to speak with Christy about that program. Tom, anything else in the news?
You know, Monsieur, yes, there is. You had mentioned a little bit earlier about budgets and state budgets and how they can be moral documents. Interestingly, this past weekend, our state governor here in New York, Governor Andrew Cuomo, announced that he was going to include about $700 million in the state budget for a project whereby they were going to do something that's pretty rare, I think, in government infrastructure spending. They're going to go about and they're going to actually decommission part of the Sheridan Expressway. And for people who may not be familiar with roadways in New York, the Sheridan Expressway basically is a road in the South Bronx that runs roughly from the South Bronx, and it just goes and terminates in the Cross Bronx Expressway. It's also known as Interstate 85. And what they're looking to do is they're looking to...
895,
I'm sorry. And they're looking to actually to wind up taking down that road, and they're looking to use the funding in order to be able to convert it, Monsignor, into a tree-lined boulevard that community groups would be able to use together and kind of give access to the Bronx River, which, again, used to be a very polluted body of water here in New York. But actually, in recent years, because of help of community groups such as Youth Ministries for Peace and Justice in the Bronx, is actually now has fish in it again, and even beavers, if you can even imagine. So we're looking forward to enjoying that park someday, Monsieur.
Well, you know, it's interesting because that's one of our Catholic Charities affiliated agencies in the Bronx. And it just shows the breadth of what Catholic Charities does. I mean, we do childcare, we do residences and homes for people with developmental disabilities. We feed people who are hungry, and we do a variety of things. But Youth Ministries is a special one of our Catholic Charities affiliated agencies. It works with youth, and really out of a strong sense of our Catholic faith, and that youth deserve a chance to fulfill their potential, but they do it by also working in the community and improving the community that they live in. So part of their work, their mission, is to work with young people on community improvement projects. And the one that Tom just referred to was kind of cleaning up the Bronx River, making it a place where families couldn't go again. And I know for the past few years they've done boat rides during the summer months there. So, and I know that on their agenda for a while has been the decommissioning of this road 895. It is kind of like the road to nowhere. I do travel that a whole lot. It's kind of a fun road because it only goes for a few miles and it goes from wherever to wherever. And it's, you know, they built it, but it probably was going to go someplace else, but it hasn't gotten there. So, you know, that's where we are. And so, you know, movement, these things never happen overnight, but at least there's the first foray into kind of, I would say, converting it into a park, a walkway to reconnect people and the community. So I'm delighted that that was there. You know, we are continue to be in the middle of Lent, and I point out to people we're just about halfway through Lent. And so here's what I say about Lent is that, so if you've been doing good for the first part of Lent with your practices of prayer, fasting, sacrifice, charity, service of others, congratulations, almost about halfway through. So that is a really good thing. If you haven't been doing too well, you have a whole next half to get it right. So you don't get a break. You don't get, because you say, well, it's halfway over, I can't do it. No. There's half of Lent still to come, and so there's a chance to continue to prepare for the sacred days of Holy Thursday, Good Friday, Easter Sunday, and there's still a lot of time left. And, you know, remember, we talked about how we wanted to really focus again on Lent. It's a great time of renewal, and you got to do three things. You got to pray some more. You have to serve other people more, and you have to do some things of sacrifice to kind of focus yourself, focus on God, and focus on a neighbor. And so this is a very good time of the year. Halfway through it, we should kind of continue, and we're getting, you know, into spring now, and so it's a good time to do that. So thank you for being with us on Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. Just do it. Just love God, just love your neighbor, just love yourself. Our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. Join us again next week on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
Listening to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.